This is the ELDR manifesto that couldn't be interpreted, in my opinion, as in a very unilateral way. The wording is the following. ELDR supports the honoring of existing EU enlargement commitments for those countries fulfilling the Copenhagen EU accession criteria, which includes integration capacity as an important consideration. Well, I think it's not necessary to be skilled politicians to understand that this is the result of quite different opinions that obviously exist, I think, for different reasons, and I stress for very different reasons, in almost all the European political families. Well, I don't know, first of all, whether my own founding member country, Italy, fulfills today the Copenhagen criteria in terms of freedom and pluralism of the media, for example. But I would not avoid tackling the problem of European identity, given that I've just written a book on the subject. And I think that I can, at least in the, as a matter of principle, think that I interpret the thought of many of my fellow liberals saying this. A European identity can only be, if we think that we need a European identity, a civic identity, not a culturalistic one. It couldn't be based upon what the identity of Europe was 1,000 years ago in our pluralistic societies of today. And the core of what I tried to define in my book, for those who are familiar with Hans Kelsen's thought, the patriotism of the European Grundnorm, should be based upon individual freedom, the rule of law as opposed to unbounded political discretion and abuse, and liberal democracy. So in order to function, a European political system should base its values on this platform, in my opinion. But this doesn't mean that there couldn't be different levels of integration, and this does not mean that you must keep Turkey out and develop the present European Union in something more, in something deeper than it is. It could also be that this European Union develops and enlarges as a more integrated market that is an area of stability and security and even human rights, strengthen human rights, and at the same time build another deeper level of government that is necessary for Europe to have a voice in a globalized world. Without a voice in a globalized world that cannot be the result of 27 dwarves that have to agree with each other each time they make a decision, I think that Europe cannot have a say in a globalized world. It is as if we had the Italian foreign policy or the German foreign policy that were made, making step by step every single decision agreed upon by the 20 Italian regions or by the 16 German lenders.
And so on. Maybe I would like to focus this evening, also because we are here in Caritas house, about a very tricky issue, which is the migrants question. The immigration policy and also the asylum policy, where really some values are at stake, like solidarity, security,
freedom.
Yeah, we can add a lot of values in this discussion. Now, I think this is something where people understand that national states have difficulties to address this, to tackle this question. So people look at Europe, but we see that Europe struggles to develop a common asylum and migration policy. And when it's, and we see that it's sometimes a very, very harsh policy. We saw this last week a new phenomenon when the Italian Minister of Interior Affairs decided to drive back a boatload of refugees to Libya without giving them access to the European Union territory, so without giving them the opportunity to apply for asylum. This triggered a strong condemnation from the UNHCR, also from the Catholic Church and Christian institutions. But the European Commission has been very prudent on this and seems to dodge the problem. So, of course, this is a difficult issue, but let us try to focus on this migration and asylum question. They're different, I know. We have also the issue of the blue card, so attracting highly qualified people and so on. Let us hear the different stances on this problem. Will we start with the Italian one?
Oh, I'm a little bit ashamed, but yes, I think that Europeans largely underestimate, and including some of the political families in Europe largely underestimate the degradation of, and the state of the present debate on these issues in my country. I wouldn't add anything to what has been said because the story tells speaks for itself. There was an agreement before the decision of the Interior Minister, that is a member of the Northern League, that was signing a treaty between the Libyan government, Colonel Gaddafi, and the Italian government led by Silvio Berlusconi. And I, unfortunately, I must say that this treaty was approved with the vote both of the government and of a large part of the opposition. And namely, the Democratic Party had a position which belongs more or less, or are thinking of to which family they are going to belong, but basically they belong mostly to the socialist family, and they voted in favor of this treaty. Now, this treaty has empowered Libya in dealing with those immigrants that are trying to reach the coasts of Italy, and organizing, I don't know how to call them, probably concentration camps is the only possible definition that you can apply to these situations, where these these people both would be immigrants and would be asylum seekers, should be sent with the aid of the Italian Coast Guard. The result is that, of course, what next? I would say that the Libyan government doesn't offer enough guarantee, is what the diplomatic jargon should suggest to say, for the fate of these persons. And what about, for example, an asylum seeker from Libya who is sent to Libya again? The solution that has been proposed is to have a European European people in Libya that should examine the requests for asylum, of course, very far from the eyes of a scrutiny of free media from the coasts of Europe. I think that this is a story that speaks for the, for itself, and there is nothing to that can be added to this. The point is that we lack almost everywhere proper policies for the integration of immigrants, and the big risk is that immigrants will be integrated on the basis of their assumed ideology, religious identity. Now, no one can make presumptions on the religious identity of anybody. If one a guy is born or a girl is born in a country of Islamic tradition, there is no reason why thinking that he must be an Islamic faithful. So the idea that is very much liked by both of the Catholic Church, I would say at least in Italy, and by the present Italian government and by the left, to substitute a policy of integration with the delegation of this to the so-called inter-religious dialogue is something that, in my opinion, is very dangerous for the rights of single individuals, especially for four categories of individuals. Apostates, because freedom of religion is not only the freedom to practice the one ancestor's religion, but also the freedom to relinquish, to abandon, or to change one's religion, and also the choice to be a non-religious person. So apostates, women, minors of age, and homosexuals. I think that these four categories of individuals are put at risk by integration policies that are based upon inter-religious dialogue rather than upon integrating people in the values of liberal democracy. Thank you. No, the point is really this. Why was there a proposal that was described as positive, for example, on the immigration by the Commission, and then it was not never assumed by the Council? Because there is no transparency in the European decision or process. And how can you resolve this problem? I think that there is only one way you can solve this problem, and that is establishing a normal, democratic, political process at the European level for those matters that have to be decided at the European level. There are very, very, very many already, and that are necessary if we want to have a say in the globalized world. It was said before that there is a problem of trust, and of course this is the problem why the constitutional, so-called constitutional treaty failed. But the point is that we should explain to our fellow citizens, and not treating them like children. Some politicians in my country say that you should treat electors like 11 years old children, because that is how advertising works in the commercial arena. Now we have to speak to our electors as adults and tell them that if they want to have a say in the globalization process, you have to have a European decision level. There is no alternative to this. And if you want to abolish or to extinguish or to solve the democratic deficit problem, you have to have a European government with the trust of citizens at the European level, and therefore a European political system, and therefore European political parties. There is no third way, in my opinion. We have gone step by step, probably in a direction that could seem the same, but the point is that not tackling the big problem means that the citizens are more and more confused and more opposed, because they see the European construction as just a piece of a globalization where they think that they have no say.
Maybe an answer to this, what can religious bodies do within the European Union? We had this in the last period of the Commission, we had this regular dialogue, and it will be with Lisbon a kind of institution, even if I understand well.
Yes, not only with religious bodies, but also with, I remember, philosophical and cultural organizations at the same level, both. And that is very important, in my opinion. I would like to put this question to those who advocate a particular public role, because in our secularized and pluralistic societies, what we cannot accept, and this is one of the biggest misunderstandings usually between us and the world of religion in general, with some exceptions such as our very, very close friend, for example, in the Waldensian Church in Italy, that are very much on our position. But when we talk about this, what we cannot accept is the idea that there is an epistemological, anthropological, and social primacy of one specific vision of the world in comparison with the others. When the request is for a public role of religion, I think we should try to understand what we mean. This is not a matter, if it is not just a matter of freedom, which is, of course, beyond any possibility of question. What public resources, what higher position in the society, what superior social dignity, what higher degree of protection from public criticism should be, in your opinion, provided to religious bodies, religious institutions, religious leaders, religious symbols, religious individuals, and refused, denied, or taken away from those who cannot be labeled as religious, which is, by the way, a definition by no means obvious today? This is the question that I try to put to those who ask for a public role, not in the civil society. Religions and different way of thinking, religious or not religious, are vital for a vibrant civil society. But as far as the political level is concerned, the point is, should this interfere from above in the democratic political process? This is the question I would pose from our traditionally liberal secularist point of view, with a hint of Italian problems in this.
Thank you very much. I don't know if everyone is aware about the point of view of the Valdense Church, but anyway.